for horses a whip, and for donkeys a bit. A rod for the back of a fool is a hit, but answer a fool in his foolishness not, unless you desire to be like him a lot. Proverbs 26, verses 3 and 4. For today, that's our scripture, little children. From the Ward Green Version, 2004, Proverbs 26, verses 3 and 4. Coming back once again to our study in the article Trojan War now. We're in chapter 10. Yesterday we covered paragraphs 1 to 5 to some extent. Anyway, we reviewed some and we did some new ones. These are very short paragraphs this time. But let me first of all show you this from the work of Israel Finkelstein. I was trying to find this yesterday, from 2015, his article Radiocarbon Dating Kerbet Kayafa and the Iron 1 to 2A Phases in the Shephelah, Methodological Comments and a Bayesian Model, Radiocarbon, Volume 57, page 891. In Table 3 from 898, page 898 in the case of this particular Table 3, this is what I was trying to show you from the row early iron, is it early iron 2A or the other one? No, the previous, late iron 1 or transitional iron 1 to 2A. So the transition between iron 1 and iron 2, that's what this is. Iron 1 to 2A is possible for what this dates, or it could be late iron 1, which is the same idea. And the numbers he gave were the numbers between 10:10 and 9:36. Okay, that's the radiocarbon dates in the model called the Shephelah model, which the Shephelah is the sort of the, not the mountainous region, I think, but the between the coastal plains of Israel and the mountains, there's the Shephelah. It's not as high in altitude. Now we do a calculation here for the average, if we can. We might, I mean. We can, but should we or not? 10:10 plus 9:36, this is how you do an average. Put another bracket, end that bracket, divide by 2. So add these two numbers and divide by 2, and look at the average. 973 is exactly the number we have for year 1 of Shishak in our chronology. So, more evidence that is that Shishak could have been the one who instigated the change or the transition from iron 1 to iron 2, or 1B to 2A, as it's also called. But sometimes it's called iron 1C, the end of iron 1. So, iron 1, for some people who consider that iron 1B was succeeded by iron 1C, and some people do that. Then we have, for example, the results from Geezer, the chronology of Geezer, this article by Webster, 2023, very recent article. Iron 1C to 2A transition here from Geezer. This radiocarbon measurement is 2830 plus or minus 30. We know 2830 is the time of Shishak, very close. So when we average here, 1014, average with 929, did I close that program? Probably. Anyway, we can see that it's very close to what, right here, 1014 and 929. Or we could look at 1057 and 904, the 90%, 95% range, or the 90, yeah, the one sigma, one standard deviation error estimate gives, that always holds in statistics, 68, statistically speaking, it's 68% of all measurements, and the range that's twice the standard deviation in either direction, it holds 95% of all the results. statistically speaking. So if we look at the 95%, that should hold most of the results. And for that particular example, iron 1C to 2A, the 95% range is 1057 to 904. We could do use either one. We're going to get something similar, but 1057 plus 904 divided by 2. .5. See, even that's close to being, and that was considered to be the transition from iron 1 to iron 2 again. It's within 7 or 8 years of what our dating is for Shishak, so it's remarkably fantastic, good, in agreement with our chronology once again. It's phenomenal, is it not? I mean, you can see these things, as also the transition can take time. So in this work of Mr. Finkelstein from 2010, he says that late iron 1 dates 1037 to 913. That is the date of the phase. The transition, he thinks, is between 960 and 899, which is about 930. For the transition between iron 1 and iron 2. So that would be 40 years lower than what we would think. But then again, after Shishak destroyed the cities, maybe it took decades for the transition to really begin, or at least for the midpoint. You see, he says the transition began in 960 in that table, right? That's right. He's saying the transition began in 960. So it began to transition from iron 1 to iron 2, he's saying, in 960. That's only 13 years after the destruction in our chronology of all the cities by Shishak. It's 13 years difference is phenomenally good. It's good agreement. Everything we see is in good agreement, it looks like. There's some interesting results here, though, from Alagich, who suggests that the... So, for those who are... Excuse me. Tickle in my throat. Could be anything, allergy or anything. For those people who are promoting a low chronology, this is important because this result suggests that the low chronology is wrong when they say that sub-proto-geometric 3, which is also considered middle geometric, I guess it's the same period in different parts of the world, perhaps, whatever it is. Anyways, SPG3 and MG, which is the middle geometric, are 850 to 750 traditionally, but he's suggesting raising it because of Sindos and also Zagora, which show dates, it's just, in the case of Sindos, it's 990 to 870, and it's 100 years higher. It's 100 years higher, more than 100 years higher. And at Zagora, it's between, well, it's at least 75 years higher on the upper limit, 850 compared to 925, and the lower limit is at least 100 years higher, 855 compared to 750. He's saying 100 years is what these need to be raised by. And this is from, these are from cities, I believe, that are in Greece, though. Zagora, Andros, Greece. This is from Antiquity, Volume 98, 2024, a very recent publication, by the way. When we look at the late Helladic period, LH3C, late Helladic 3C, is traditionally considered to be starting in 1200. The radiocarbon results for it were starting between 1260 and 1120. I'm not sure if that's just the beginning or the beginning to the end. I think that's just the beginning of it that they're trying to measure here, but it's ambiguous. But they give a date anyway from radiocarbon, and the average date here is about Well, between 1260 and 1120, that's about 1200. Same for the other two measurements, 1270 to 1130, that's exactly 1200 for the average. And 1270 to 1110, again, it's near 1200 for the average of the beginning dates for LH3C, late Hellenic 3C pottery. So these results by Hagens, 2006, suggest that his article was called Testing the Limits, and that suggests that the late Hellenic is dated fairly accurately according to convention. So we don't see, you know, many problems in our chronology actually being at least as high as convention. You know, it is roughly where we are. But keep in mind, our Egyptian chronology is only 36 years higher than the so-called convention, which is, in our view, or compared to our chronology, it's 36 years too low. It's not 46 years like with Solomon. The Egyptian chronology difference was only 36 years. Keep that in mind, because that will become important. It will matter at some point. So we've looked at White Law, chapter 10 here, and he's done these amazing charts using the results of the radiocarbon from the publication called Radiocarbon. And, you know, it was remarkable, but in paragraph 6 now of chapter 10, what is not shown in the graph above is that White Law, in plotting the data, was correcting for the variation in the level of radiocarbon in the air over the period of time before and after the deluge. He was correcting for the amount of radiocarbon that was in the air at the time, many years ago, before the deluge, okay? And that affects the amount of radiocarbon in the samples. And these corrections are larger the further back you date the samples, as is indicated in our table number 10.1 here. And radiocarbon corrections of Robert Whitelaw, this table, shows that, well, even for 1,000 years before present, he's correcting it and suggesting that if it's 1115, it should be really 1100 before present. So what he's saying is that the numbers need to be reduced so that if, for example, our date of Shashak, if it's around 2900, he's saying it should be 2500, 400 years lower. He's saying 400 years, well, we would have to disagree with that, I think. That part, I think, we would have to disagree with that because we can't lower Shishak 400 years, which is what that implies, right? Now, whether he's... Now, he's not doing... Maybe his correction is not using the calibration curves. I'm not sure how he did it, actually. I'll have to investigate what he did more. I haven't investigated what he did. There's so much in science. And yesterday I spent several hours watching YouTube videos from a couple of different channels, which were very, very good to do with creation. They were excellent... See what I've got here. I need to find this. Here it is. I want to find the names of the channels I was looking at, if I can find them. They were really, really, really good channels. Creation Ministries is one of them. Creation Ministries International. Really, really, really interesting and informative information. That was one of them. I'm just thankful that YouTube gives me the same channel. I mean, every day it gives me new videos from the channel I watched yesterday. So if it weren't for the YouTube algorithm, I wouldn't even know about this. But Institute for Creation Research, that might be the other one. I'm not sure what the other one was. That might not be it. But there was another one, another channel. Well, it's in my history. Let me look at my history. Let's just look at my history here. So... Tuesday. What do I want? I just want YouTube. Yeah, let's just look at YouTube in my history and see what I can find. What are the dates here? Today. No, I don't want today's. Let's see. The 13th is probably, it's more like the 12th. Probably. Let's see. Well, I'll find it later. I'll find it later. But there are a lot of really informative channels nowadays available on the YouTube channel. I mean, on the YouTube website, that are giving information that show. Like, I mean, I knew a lot of this before, but I didn't actually believe it strongly enough. But when you look at the age of the Earth, they've dated rocks from Mount St. Helens that were 10 years old, and they, using the method they always use to test rocks, which is potassium argon, potassium decays to argon, and there's assumed to be zero argon to start with, and they dated the rocks from Mount St. Helens, and they arrived at a billion-year-old measurement for 10-year-old rocks, which shows that the measurements they use on the rocks is faulty, entirely faulty, because their assumptions are wrong about the argon being zero at the start, evidently. So they're completely unable to date rocks, so the idea that the Earth is 4 billion years old can be disproven, and by other means also. For example, if based on the erosion of the coastlines of the continents that we have nowadays, assuming that that continued the same and calculate back, why wouldn't it's eroding some number of centimeters every year or something like that. If you calculate back billions of years, there would be no continents anymore if the Earth were that old. There would just be a flat ocean. You know, all the land would be under the ocean if the Earth were billions of years old. And the other thing is the rivers, the sediment deposited by rivers at the mouth of the river, all that sediment can be measured. And because of the deluge, there's more of it there than there would have been in the Bible model. But if there's no Bible model, the Earth can't be more than millions of years old, not billions, based on the amount of sediment at the bottom of the rivers, assuming that the rivers were flowing continually since the beginning of creation of the Earth. So, yeah, it's impossible that the Earth is billions of years old, according to that. But the deluge explains a lot of other things. These channels are just remarkable. I think it's that channel that the first one I mentioned there is the one that is the one that is so... Now I've lost it. Oh, I've got... What have I done? Well, Off the Curb Ministries, it was also... I mentioned that before, but he's not... interviewing these scientists. Creation.com. Creation.com was the website of one of the people that was interviewed who gave a very good interview. Creation Ministries International. That's the other one. That's the YouTube channel. But there's another one, though. I'm sure there's another YouTube channel. But I can't give you everything in one day, obviously. But the thing is, it's been very... It's evidently true also... The amazing point, I guess we'll just dispense with this. I mean, we can see that from this graph, right, that we saw already by Whitelaw, that we saw marine specimens that were more than 50 feet above sea level after the deluge. From the Bible, that, you know, when we believe the deluge, because we believe the Bible, we believe the deluge, we'd expect waters to be above the tops of the mountains, like the Bible said. In Genesis 7, there were waters above the tops of the mountains because of the deluge that flooded the whole earth. And the ice ages were explained on one of these Creation Ministries International YouTube videos. The ice ages were explained by one gentleman, and how he explained a lot of things about why there would be so many life forms present and why they would suddenly die off. The reason they suddenly died off is because after the deluge, the oceans were warmer because there was a huge amount of tectonic activity, or volcanic activity, actually. The volcanic activity during the deluge warmed the oceans. This is what the belief of this gentleman was. And this made the coastal regions very temperate, whereas the Ice Age began at that time. He also said there could never have been an ice age where the earth was covered with ice entirely, because there would be no way for the ice to ever melt again, because you couldn't heat up anything. I mean, because the light reflected by the ice prevents the warming of anything. The sunlight could never warm up the earth if it were covered in white ice, because all the light would reflect from the white and it would not be able to be warmed up. So there was never an ice age that was covering the whole earth. That's one thing that he talked about. But also, you could have this time after the deluge when it was very warm. The oceans were so warm that they evaporated quickly, and that's why there was so much ice in the continental regions. But it was warm on the coastline where the ocean was warm, and that's where all the animals lived. And then they suddenly died off when the oceans cooled off. Eventually, they died off, you know, and they couldn't survive anymore because the extreme difference in, everything got much colder in the winter when we didn't have the warm oceans. The warm oceans would moderate everything. But when the oceans are like they are now, we have cold winters and warm summers, very hot summers, very cold winters. And so during those times when it was temperate, that's when there was a lot of rainfall and snow on the mainland that was so large in quantity that the tectonic activity, the volcanic activity, caused dust in the air that prevented the warming of the sun on the continents. So the continents, because they were far away from the warm oceans, they got ice. So that was the ice age. That's what caused the ice age, was the deluge. Caused the ice age. All these things were talked about on that channel, Creation Ministries International. But the second gentleman that was even better, I thought, because he explained how if we all have died, you know, if death came before Adam, if death is something that God created, then there would be no need for Jesus Christ. But the fact that the Bible says that Jesus is necessary because of Adam's sin, and that Adam was the first one who ever sinned and who ever died. In other words, death came after Adam because of sin. That changes the whole guideline, the whole understanding, the whole interpretation of what it means that we need the ransom of Jesus, the sacrifice ransom of Jesus. Is needed, you see, if death originated with Adam. In other words, nothing was dying before, not even the animals were dying before Adam. Everything was living forever until Adam sinned. This is the understanding, the new understanding that I got. And this is what the gentleman explained. But he also had a great way of understanding and explaining how everything we interpret is based on our belief systems. Our interpretation of all the evidence is based on our beliefs. So if we say, well, that we already believe the earth is billions of years old, then if something doesn't fit with that theory, then we'll try to make it fit with that theory, because we already believe that, if as one example. But I mean, how do you explain? Okay, the other problem we would have to explain is the Big Bang, right? How do we explain that the Big Bang took 14 billion years? You know, I mean, that's what scientists have figured out. How do we explain it happened in six literal days, 6 days of creation, which is what Genesis says? How can we adopt or believe that, right? But keep in mind that everything they believe about the universe, scientists, remember, keep in mind, every time they put up a new, like the James Webb Space Telescope, every time they put a new telescope into the sky, right, every time they do that and make new measurements, they come back with saying, well, all our theories don't work anymore. Have you ever noticed that? Every time they learn something new by delving deeper with some radically new technology, they come back with the result that says, we were wrong about everything. That's what they say. And all their theories are gone, which just goes to show that their theories were based on assumptions, and the assumptions may, in fact, have been completely wrong. So just keep in mind that science has nothing to say about God, because the other thing about science is it starts with the assumption that there is no God. The Bible even says that all their sayings are, there is no God. Speaking about the wicked one, I think is what that's about. We'd have to look it up and see whether it's specifically the wicked one or what it is. Let's see if I can open this program here. Let's go to the Bible. Let's look up, no, there is no God. See if I can find that. No, I'm not going to be able to find that. It's in Psalms, I think. I want to find that scripture. Is it the wicked one? I think it's the wicked one. Psalms. The wicked one, according to his superciliousness, makes no search. All his ideas are, Psalm 10 and 4, there is no God. So the wicked one, in everything he does, all of his ideas are, there's no God. Keep that in mind, so that therefore they can't accept God in science. That's part of their belief system of science. So they'll never be able to accept anything except based on the assumptions, which are random. They're relatively random assumptions that they make. And then they come up with a theory. If the theory works, they think, well, the assumption was probably right. But unfortunately, they can't test assumptions about age. You can never, that's the other point made by this other gentleman, is you can never test age. You can never measure it without historical record. Without an historical record, there's no way of testing age at all, of measuring it. It's impossible to measure age accurately in any sense, with any confidence, using any method. So we use radiocarbon, we get remarkable results with radiocarbon, but see, that's why we have to always confirm it with our chronology. You can't use radiocarbon results as they are, because they are meaningless without the chronology to back it up. So that's why everything was based on the 973 Shishak invasion of the Levant region. In our chronology, everything to do with our study is based on Shishak in 973. We don't care about results that disagree with that, because the historical record is far more trustworthy. The numbers, okay. Yeah, on the graph, the dots on the graphs that I showed you. Where's my graph? Which one is it? This one? No. We're going to come to that one. That's not it either. This is it. Yeah, on this graph, these dots represented the bars of the histogram that were shown on Mr. Whitelaw's graph that looked something like that. This was an abridged version, a condensed version of Mr. Whitelaw's results that was presented by Mr. Uman on his website. That's what this was, showing how the flood is indicative, in complete agreement with the results of the radiocarbon in terms of the frequency of how many measurements gave that result. And so I explained, okay, the dots were the numbers of samples found in each 500-year period. They were published results. These were published results, all of them. So all of these are valid published results. And the curves that I drew were an estimate of the yearly number. The number of samples per year, I drew these curves that would fit the 500-year histogram bars that were shown on the histogram. So We saw a rise in the number of life forms just prior to this date, 3282 BCE. That's what verified our date of the deluge, remarkably so, because we had no other way. I mean, I was just looking anywhere to find any confirmation, and this is what I found. The assumption is that the age of the samples found is completely randomly distributed. In other words, we don't think that anybody who does radiocarbon measurements was looking at one time period more than any other time period. They wouldn't be looking at the time period just before 3282 BCE more than the other ones, more than the other time periods for taking measurements, because they wouldn't have known, because none of them believe, or virtually none of them believe in the Bible anyway. So these, we're assuming the age of the samples is randomly distributed, so that the number of samples from each time period is indicative of the population present of the animals and plants present at the time. In the absence of proof to the contrary, this is true. What the graph then represents is proof of the deluge. According to the BG chronology, we may agree that this date for the deluge agrees well with our own. And it does. It's a remarkable agreement. Thus, the correction of Whitelaw also for the time of the deluge, the correction he used must be pretty good too. Now, when we talk about the correction, we're going to have to look at this in more detail, but there's something happening that, let's take an example. Okay, so before the deluge, there wasn't as much carbon in the atmosphere being impacted by cosmic rays, or because of the fact that there was more water up in the sky before the deluge. And so there wasn't as much carbon-14, so that means if something looks like it's 19,000 years old, when you measure it with radiocarbon, that's the example, 19,100 years, that means 6,500 years. It's not as old as it looks according to Whitelaw, because 19,000 years ago would have been before the deluge, and there would not have been as much carbon-14 to begin with. So when you look for carbon-14, it looks like it's 19,000 years old, because the carbon-14 you assume has decayed away, it's gone. But actually, there wasn't as much to begin with. It's only 6,500 years old, according to Whitelaw. So that's today's study. It's August 14th, 2024, of the Common Era, and the time is 22:36 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. Thank you for listening and watching. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now. It's a very, very, very fascinating subject, but to do with ages, we just cannot ever measure anything to do with ages. That's why we need to know. We have a birth certificate, as the man said. So today we studied paragraphs 6 through 9 and 10. 6 through 10 of chapter 10 of the Ark, of not the Ark, it's the Trojan War article. And chapter 10 verses 6 through 10.